All right, guys. Welcome once again to another edition of the Adonis Lifestyle Podcast. I'm Brad Howard. I've got John Barbin on the phone. And today, we're going to talk about how to basically control or even maintain weight loss during the holidays. Because a lot of people just kind of let it go and, you know, they really get frustrated and don't get back on the horse and things like that. So we've got some ideas for you and some mindsets and how to plan for these things. So, John, you actually, if we go back to Thanksgiving, if we remember correctly, you actually were losing through Thanksgiving as well when you were doing, you know, your big cut down, and you're still, you know, cutting down as well. But you still maintained it through Thanksgiving, even though, you know, even though the Canadian Thanksgiving was around. Wasn't that like earlier on?
It's like it's the end of October, so it's about a month ahead of the American Thanksgiving.
Right, but it was still were maintaining your whole thing through that. What were some of the mindsets and things that you were thinking about? Obviously, because you thought about this whole thing, kind of going through it to actually keep you on track and not frustrated and not, you know, throwing your hands up in the air that it's not going to work for me or anything like that.
Yeah, well, the friend group I have here, we also celebrate an American Thanksgiving because we have some transplanted Americans in our circle. So, I mean, I've gone through two Thanksgivings so far during my cut down, and now I'm going to go straight through Christmas and all of this stuff. So, yeah, the mindset is the way I look at calories. Like, I mean, anyone who's read any of our stuff know that I'm all about calories in versus calories out. But that's on top of that, there's a practicality issue of pre-planning it, which was your analogy, Brad, about the credit card. Overeating one day and then telling yourself you're going to work it off the next day is kind of like maxing out your credit card and telling yourself you're gonna pay it off before the interest kicks in, which most people never do. So part of what I do is I reduce my calorie intake leading up to an event that I know I'm going to eat a lot. So for a Thanksgiving style dinner, that's going to be a lot of calories. Like I don't want to worry about how many calories it is. I don't want to be the one person at dinner who's avoiding things. It's impossible. Once you're there, once all of the food's out, all of the pre-dinner snack foods, it's social. That's what people do together. I even put a blog post up asking what is it that people do socially besides eat, and no one could answer me because I don't think there is anything people do socially as a group besides eat, or at least consume something. So you're fighting a losing battle if you show up to one of these things and you're going to try to tell yourself that you're going to be pick and choose how much food you're going to eat. Like, you know yourself, you know how much you would normally eat at these things, and there's no point in even fighting it because it just ruins the event for you. So what you can do is, and what I did was I just reduced calories leading up to it with a, you know, kind of anticipating how much I thought I would be eating that day. And I, you know, I didn't measure anything out. I just took a guess that I'd be overeating at least 1500 calories above my BMR that day. So I'm like, I got to at least make a 1500 calorie deficit along the way, you know, during the week into that weekend to at least maintain the weight I was. And if I wanted to even continue losing, just create an even larger deficit. So, and when you look at it that way, it's not that hard. I just need to, you know, be disciplined or at least pay attention for about 4 or 5 days before, which basically is what I do. I kind of stay strict throughout the week and create a deficit that not only allows me to eat a bit more on the weekends, as well as maintain my weight loss. So I don't wipe out the weight loss that I created throughout the week by just way overdoing it on the weekends. But I create enough of a deficit during the week that I can loosen it up on the weekends and still maintain weight loss. And then one of the other things I do is I bookend the weekend eat-a-thon or the big feast with a longer duration of a fast. So during my cut-down, I don't know that I was actually doing full 24-hour eat-stop-eat-style fast, but at the towards these sort of things, I'll throw in a fast right afterwards too. And after eating that much food, I don't really feel like eating. So it's actually not that hard to take a 24-hour break right afterwards.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, and just to kind of throw it out there, a lot of the strategies and things like that John's talking about, not necessarily eat, stop, eat, but some of the other basic stuff, is actually found in the actual index manual of the Adonis Index Systems. That's at adonisindexsystems.com. If you don't have it already, you might want to check it out because we kind of keep it simple for you, because that's really all it needs to be. It doesn't need to be all complicated as far as diet and nutrition. You got to simplify that. So let's talk about something that I think we talked about a little bit yesterday, and that's the fact that, you know, for a lot of people, they have, I'm not going to say issues with food, but they kind of have this battle, and maybe especially during the holidays, maybe if they don't have a significant other to share it with, or, you know, if they're lonely or something like that, you know, they get into this thing of emotional eating, and, you know, they're trying to cut down at the same time, and so they're kind of fighting and beating themselves up because they can't quit emotional eating. And what we were talking about yesterday is the fact that it's not really the emotional eating that you're fighting, and it's not really there's other underlying issues that you need to kind of take care of. And the reason we're saying that is because, like, for myself, you know, right when I started my cut down, one of my big problems was that I would be up at night, I would be kind of restless, and, you know, so I would watch TV, and I'd be bored, so I would eat. And we're not talking about, like, eating massive amounts of stuff, but I would shove stuff in my mouth or whatever, you know, and it was actually hindering me. So instead of, you know, beating myself up and going, man, I just can't help myself, and feeling helpless about it, I just kind of sat back and I was like, well, okay, well, why is it that I am, you know, restless at night? How come I can't sleep? And so what I ended up starting to do was just wake up a lot earlier in the morning. So instead of waking up maybe 8 or 9, I wake up at like 5 or 6. And what that did was actually pretty, I'm not going to say amazing, but it actually totally just negated that whole thing. I don't have that issue anymore. The earlier I wake up, you know, because when I get done with the day, you know, at, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 o'clock at night, depending on how the day's going, you know, come home, you know, spend some time with her, and by 10 o'clock, I'm ready to hit the sack. And so I don't even have to worry about, you know, being up till 1, 2 o'clock in the morning, can't sleep. It just automatically takes care of itself. So let's talk about some of that type of thing, because yeah, I think that's really important.
So you actually step back and identify where you were eating more, how you ended up in a position where you were consuming extra calories, and you're like, how do I not put myself in that position?
Right.
Right. And this is exactly what a lot of people miss the boat completely on, this when they're reading nutrition books and learning about, like, carb cycling and all of this. The issue with weight has never been about knowing anything about nutrition. It's been knowing about you, knowing about yourself. If you can't pin down, like you said, you were an emotional eater. You were a bored, restless eater.
Right.
Because you hadn't addressed the situation of, why is it that I'm always up late? So again, what, you know, being successful on your cut down had nothing to do with knowing anything about nutrition. It had to do with knowing, identifying what the time of day that you eat and how to eliminate that time of day. Mm-hmm. And that's the underlying issue is always much more important than ever learning anything about nutrition. I almost kind of look back at all the education and training we have in nutrition, and I'm wondering, like, oh my God, like, so much of that seems so pointless now for people who are trying to lose weight, at least, just because I'm like, none of it matters for people trying to lose weight. What matters is getting to the root of their issues of why they eat. So, you know, I have a friend who's, he gets really stressed out with what he does for work, and he uses food to calm down, and it's an anxiety thing. So it doesn't, there's never going to be a food he can choose, or an eating style, or an eating pattern that he could do that he'll always gain weight until he solves the anxiety issue. And as long as food is his drug of choice to deal with his anxiety, he's beat. Like, he doesn't need to read another nutrition book. He needs to, I don't know what it is, go to counsel, whatever it is. It's the anxiety that needs to be addressed, and then the food will cease to be a drug that's of any use to him. Like, he won't need to overeat to deal with his anxiety.
Right.
So, same thing with you. You weren't, you know, all you had to do was identify. And it's not hard for people to identify this stuff if they bother to stop and take a look at how it works. This is another, whether or not it's hard and easy, simple and difficult. It's actually not that hard to identify it, but it isn't easy to go through it. So what am I trying to say here? It's a simple thing. Like, your situation was relatively simple. You just, like, looked at it, but actually implementing it you know, might not be as easy. Like maybe some other people just can't get up at 6 or 7 or whatever, or 5 o'clock. But if for you it was, you know, I can do that, then there you go, problem solved.
That's just one of those things you just kind of – it's like any habit. I mean, the first week or two, it sucks. You know, it's like if you're used to putting your pants on one, you know, right leg first your whole life, and you try to start doing it left leg first. I mean, you have to like consciously think, okay, left leg first, left leg first, left leg first. And then after, you know, a certain amount of time, it just becomes natural to do it that way. I mean, it's like any habit. It's like anything that you do that you build up some sort of streak to do. And I think that's probably one of the most underestimated tools in people's arsenal, is building up on that streak and actually marking it down that they've got a streak going.
To build momentum into something new.
Right, exactly. I mean, you don't really see that. I mean, what you see, and Tom and I talked about this, Tom Venuto talked about this when we did that bonus module for the Adonis Index program, that goals manifestation thing. What you find is that most people try to willpower their way through a lot of this stuff.
It's impossible. You can't willpower your way through any of this stuff.
Right, and so basically you end up beating yourself up because you don't think you're strong enough to do it, when it's not necessarily willpower that gets you through it. It's the way you're positioning yourself. Like how do you set yourself up to succeed?
Exactly. It's not totally an absence of willpower. It's knowing where to put that energy.
Right.
So there's certain things you can push against that you can move, and there's certain things you can push against that you cannot move. And so, like, for instance, one of those things, perfect example in your case, you couldn't stick to your old sleeping pattern, be restless and awake at late at night, and then put your energy into finding lower calorie snacks. That's not going to work, right? That would be the nutrition solution to it. Oh, well, you know, if you eat late at night, just eat something with less calories. No, it's BS. Like, what's going on there is you're purposely looking for food that has some calories in it to help reduce the restlessness, right?
Well, here's what would happen. Let me tell you this, because this will help. Because, you know, I can hear people saying, well, yeah, that's what you would do. Just make sure you have low-calorie foods in the house, whatever. But the problem is that you always run out. You know what I mean? It doesn't matter how prepared you are. I mean, I'm busy. I mean, just like everybody else. I mean, I'm a busy dude. I don't have time to make sure I've got, you know, cucumbers and celery just stocked up at all times. I mean, so I run out. And so if I'm not eating that, or what if I just don't feel like eating that? Maybe if I eat one, I'm just not doing what I wanted to do. So you just go rummage through and find something else.
Yeah, the point is, in that situation, at that moment, at that moment, you know that
there's something there.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Your urge to eat at that moment is more powerful than your will to not do it. So don't put yourself in that position.
It's almost like drinking beer or drinking alcohol, and you get a couple drinks in you, and you're like, then you start justifying why it's okay that you're going to do what you're getting ready to do. So like you plan ahead for all this stuff, and then it's like, all right, you're at that moment, you're ready to eat something, and you might even have the healthy snacks there, but then you're like, you see like the donut or whatever, like we don't really keep donuts in the house, but you know, something like that, and you're like, and then you just justify it real quick in your head, because that's what you want to do. You've already made the decision you're going to eat that damn donut. But you go, you know what? I'll just go run on a treadmill for another 20 minutes tomorrow to negate this. Knowing damn well you're not going to do it. But you tell yourself you're going to do it, so you eat it. And that's what I'm saying. I mean, once you get to that point where the temptation is there and you have to make the decisions or whatever, it's really hard to make the correct decision.
Yeah, that's why so much of the nutrition sort of guidelines are sort of don't make any sense, because they're assuming you can actually stand there making the right decision. This is
the same. Let me relate this back. I read something the other day in a psychology book. This is the same thing, and we're going to kind of go off a little bit on a tangent, but you know, hopefully this doesn't make anybody uncomfortable. But it's like when guys are or humans are aroused in like a sexual nature. And they're in that moment, they tend to make very, very, very poor decisions. And that's why, you know, this one thing was talking about, condom usage and things like that, why it's, even if somebody has one with them, why, you know, the rate of actual usage is so low, because people, once they get in that moment in time and they're ready to
go,
I guess you could say, I mean, they're, I guess, I need to reread it, but I don't know if it's chemically or something like that, but it basically makes that decision to do that so difficult. So difficult. I mean, they even did a study where they had a guy where they basically were showing him porn, and they were like, you know, just do whatever you do to make yourself happy doing porn. And then what they were doing was flashing questions up on the screen and asking him like survey questions of how he feel and what, how he would decide to do things and stuff like that. It was really weird. And basically what they found was that during this state of arousal or whatever, because they did like two different surveys, one with the guys where they were just totally just, you know, 8 in the morning or whatever, just normal, and then in a state of arousal. And they found that during the state of arousal, even when asked roughly the same questions, the answers that were given were so different that and so much more, I would say, not necessarily risky, but, you know, their choices of mate were like, so if they were just straight, they saw one woman, they were like, ah, she's not that hot. You know, but then in the state of arousal, they were kind of like, well, yeah, I mean, she might be all right. You know what I mean? It's the same thing. It's the same type of mechanism.
Less discretionary.
Right, exactly. I mean, it's like once, and like I said, I know this is kind of a big stretch going back and forth, and it's probably not the same pathways, and I realize that, but the fundamental problem is the same, is that once you're there and you have to deal with that particular issue right there, it's like, all right, now I'm in a state of mind where I want to eat. I don't have anything else better to do with my time, you know, other than to eat. What do I do? And it's just that pull. And so your decision making ability is clouded a lot. And really, that's when the willpower, in trying to willpower your way through, really really sucks, because you're actually putting it's like putting an alcoholic in a bar.
Yeah, and saying don't drink.
Exactly.
It's impossible. And basically, we're all alcoholic. We're all like foodaholics, I guess you could say.
Uh-huh.
Because, I mean, it's, you know, after air and water, the next most important thing is food. So it's kind of, we're driven to eat when food's around. That's just obvious. So it's pretty hard to stand in front of food, especially if you know and there's no rules here. There's no fundamental how you should be or how people there's no like, sort of perfect state of balancing your ability to eat food when it's present and all that kind of stuff. I mean, when in general, when people are faced with a lot of food, we're going to eat a lot of it. You know, there's obviously those people who stop faster than you do, but you already know yourself. Like, you know, if you're the type to eat a lot of it or not. And if you know that you're the type to eat a lot of it, then you don't put yourself if weight maintenance or weight loss is even remotely a goal of yours, your job isn't to learn more about nutrition. Your job is to put yourself in situations where you're not always faced with the challenge of trying to hold back on eating food when it's present, which the holidays, there's going to be a ton of food and most of us are going to eat a lot of it. So that's where you got to do this pre-planning, try to create a deficit on the weight into these things. Otherwise, you know, there's no way. And I don't think it's smart at all to just go straight into them and then assume somehow you're going to burn it off later.
Right. Yeah. It's almost kind of a, I mean, I would think it's much more empowering to just kind of say this day is going to be a wash. I already know it's going to be a wash. So I need to go ahead and do other things to make sure that I can offset that. Or even if you do get in there and let's say you overeat even more than you thought you were, I mean, I probably wouldn't even get back on the scale until maybe a week after that, just to make sure I wasn't too discouraged or something. I would just be like, okay, well, let me get back on track next day and then, you know, kind of be a little more aggressive and then maybe check my weight maybe a week later or something like that. Or maybe a couple days after that.
If you are in the middle of monitoring your body weight which if you have any sort of plan that you're moving towards, you probably should be monitoring that at some point. Yeah, the day after a big eat, it's not uncommon for a decent-sized guy to put on anywhere between 6 and 10 pounds just from eating. I mean, the food itself weighs, and that'll be in your system. Then that brings a lot of water retention with it. So, I mean, I had a buddy I was training. He put on 11 pounds in one day. And he's a big guy, but that was after he went to, like, a barbecue, and there was lots of food, and he drank, like, you know, 6 or 7 beers. And now, so that was on a Sunday. From the Sunday morning to Sunday evening, he put on 11 pounds. Uh-huh. And he was in the middle of a cutdown. I was training him. Now, his actual weekly weigh-in was Thursday morning. So from the Thursday before that weekend till the Thursday after that weekend, he actually lost a pound.
Right.
During his actual calibrated scheduled weigh-in day of Thursday morning. But in between there, he had a little peak on Sunday when he, you know, ate all that food. So that doesn't mean he gained 11 pounds of actual fat or anything. That was 11 pounds in his system, and about 10 and a half of it was just the food and water retention, because by the end of the week, he was still down a pound. So,
right.
So like you said, I mean, be careful with getting, because you'll feel a bit, I mean, you will feel bloated after a big meal, and you will actually be heavier because there's just all that food's in you. I mean, it's going to register on the scale. So if psychologically the number on the scale bothers you, like, do what Brad said and kind of stay away from the scale for a few days.
Let your body normalize again.
When's Christmas this year? It's going to be Thursday, Friday, something like that.
Right.
So people are probably going to eat big Thursday, Friday, probably eat big on the weekend too, like that Saturday and Sunday somewhere in there. So I would make your weigh-in maybe Wednesday to Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
Like maybe check yourself this Wednesday, check yourself the following Wednesday and see where you're at. And then, but give yourself a deficit, you know, eat light on the way in and eat light on the way out. And that's probably the best thing to do. I mean, that's what I'm going to do. So I guess this leads into what I'm doing this week. This past Saturday, so I guess just 2 days ago, was the start of the holiday eat-a-thons. So I had a big Christmas dinner with some friends around here. And I did a couple low-calorie days before that day. And yesterday I did 1,000 calories below. So I pretty much already offset that meal. And I'm going to be going low straight through till Christmas Eve dinner, because we have a big one on Christmas Eve and another one on Christmas Day. So, and a couple people actually asked me, is that okay? Like, are you going to be, you know, quote, withering away and all this worry about losing muscle mass? And I kind of find that interesting that people think, they think so acutely that, you know, on the 2 or 3 days where I'd be eating way below my BMR somehow is going to wither me away, but then why wouldn't the days that I overeat just build me up? So, I kind of look at it like that's looking at calories on too short of a time frame. Like, the amount of calories you eat in one day isn't going to make you fat or lose weight or lose muscle mass all in one day. It's kind of like an aggregate of weeks. So over the course of the week, I'll be just right around my caloric needs for the week, if not what I'm trying to do is a little bit below. Because if I'm going to have 2 or 3 days where I'm eating thousands of calories above my BMR, I definitely need other days where I'm eating thousands of calories below it. So it doesn't really make sense to think I'm somehow withering away the day right after I overate. So
right.
It's almost like people choose to forget the overeat day and worry about the undereat day when it comes to losing muscle, and then vice versa when it comes to gaining weight.
Right. Yeah, that's the one thing that's funny about Christmas and the holidays and things like that, is that you get a big mesh of people together that have all different backgrounds and all different goals, and, you know, some people are trying to lose, some people aren't. Some people say they're trying to lose, but they're really not. They say they're trying to lose because it's kind of like cool to say they're trying to lose weight, but they're really not even trying. And so what you're going to end up with, and just kind of like what you kind of touched on, is that you're going to be around a bunch of people who, I mean, they're going to be people that they're kind of like trying to shove stuff down your throat. You know, like aunts and uncles, try my cake, you know, try this, eat this, put this in your mouth. And it can be tough. And so let's address that. Let's address that crabs in a bucket phenomenon that everybody's going to run into.
Yeah, this is a situation where you got to be, and this doesn't happen all the time, but I'm sure anyone who's trying to change their body, like either gain some muscle or lose some body fat, which I don't know what else there is you can change. Those are the two main things. If people feel threatened. Now, I know this is significantly worse with women. Like, I know girls who can't. If a girl is active, like, I have a couple of friends who've actively been cutting down and have lost a pretty significant amount of weight, and they tell me that they can't even mention the fact that they're trying to lose weight in front of other girls who aren't, because it makes those other girls feel bad about themselves. And then it causes like kind of little bitchy catty fights between them, because their look at her and go, what do you need to lose weight for? You're already in good shape. And then it just makes the other girl feel even worse about herself because she wishes she could lose weight but doesn't have whatever the discipliner hasn't decided to try. So she tells me that the girls have to actually keep their mouth shut around each other because they'll just get excommunicated and picked on by the other girls who aren't losing weight because they feel even worse about themselves. So then she turns to me for some support because literally she can't turn to any of her girlfriends who aren't also actively trying to lose weight, which is like very few of them. So right. She kind of feels all by herself. And of all the things she needs support on, it's weight loss. And none of her friends will give her the support because they're selfishly looking at how bad it makes them feel because she's progressing and they aren't. So mm-hmm. And the same thing happens to guys. Guys are a bit more like team players. Like they're like, good for you. But at the same time, guys can do it too. Like I have a buddy who, he was really overweight and he lost a lot of weight. He lost 100 pounds and he was, so I mean, clearly he was way overweight. Right. And another guy that we've known for a long time, he's been chronically overweight his whole life. And when, you know, the guy lost weight, the other guy who wasn't ever interested in losing weight, but was just as big as they were just as big as each other, he would make fun of him and kind of pick on him. And he's like, oh, you'll be back on the big side. And that's like the last thing that guy wanted to hear. He's like, I don't know. He's like, I'm trying to lose this weight and keep it off. And he told me, he confided with me, he's like, I hate being around that guy when I'm trying to lose weight because that guy makes me feel stupid about doing it. Mm-hmm. And it's this is the crabs in a bucket. The average people, or people in general, which we, you know, if you just grab us all, we kind of do fit into a sort of an average curve. It's hard for a person to see somebody else making progress with relationships, with the shape of their body, with all this kind of stuff.
When
they want, yeah, exactly. Basically your body, your relationships and your money, there's nothing else to life. If you're watching somebody who's seems to be just as capable as you, like, you know, same kind of sort of education, you're both, you know, from, you know, decent families in North America. It's not like there's anything really wrong with your life. You should be able to progress. And one person's out progressing you in their relationships with how they build their body, with how they build their careers. It could make you feel completely inadequate because they're progressing and you're not, but you guys both started with basically the same amount of tools. So people, you got to be careful. If you're on a path to trying to like improve something, any of those things in your life, doesn't even matter what it is, you'll get a lot of pullback from people. And it's not because they don't want you to succeed. It's because your success threatens them in their view of themselves and makes themselves feel worse. So they'll subtly try to like throw little jabs at you and like kind of knock you down to make themselves feel better about themselves. It's no different than the media ripping on celebrities, and people love to see celebrities fall from grace because it brings them back down to life and makes people feel less like inferior to them.
Right. Tiger Woods, perfect example.
Yeah, Tiger Woods. People love tearing this guy apart right now because of what's happening to him. Reality is he's just a guy. He's just a guy like everybody else. And it's a bit of a low-life thing to enjoy watching somebody else fall. And that's purely an artifact of the people who are enjoying it being disappointed with themselves for never even achieving any real success. Other people who are moving towards their own success just look at what's happening to Tiger Woods and they're like, well, that sucks that those people are enjoying this because why does he deserve that?
What the thing that sucks is that, you know, you look at it and you're like, man, this is just going to make it even worse for me on the way up because people are going to that's a weird kind of dichotomy with it. You've got certain people. Like, I remember back when I was in the health club industry and doing consulting there, and if a club went out of business, we would never, like, it would never be a good thing if a club in town went out of business. And you would think that it would be a good thing. You're like, yes, less competition or whatever. But it wasn't that way, because what would happen is, you know, what that would do was like condition the town or the area that it wasn't safe to have memberships to these clubs because they were so volatile.
And yeah, so it was an indictment of your whole industry. It's like
exactly,
not good for the
exactly.
industry on a whole. Yeah,
because people would never say, they would never say, hey, I'll never join another, you know, name this chain again. I'll never join this again. You know, like if somebody would, like like back when, like I think it was Ford, when they were having problems with their tires on their Ford Explorers or whatever, you know, people would say, you know what, I'm just never going to buy another Ford again. They wouldn't say, I'm never going to buy another car again. But that's what they would do in this industry. They would say, you know what, I'm just never going to join another club again based on their one false experience. And so that tends to happen to people on the up and up, is that you really don't want to see a lot of people like that fail that are related to you, because, you know, it can that can translate over into how people perceive you and what you do.
Yeah, they paint you with the same brush.
Exactly. So it's kind of tough. Really, really interestingly, you know, we've kind of talked about some really interesting things, some things that'll help out, especially, I just thought about this, when you're in public during the holidays and, you know, you're kind of getting some of this pullback pressure, crabs in a bucket pressure and things like that. One thing that I would say never do is never say, I'm trying to do this. So like if somebody says something, don't say, I don't want to, I'm trying to lose weight or I'm trying to cut down, because that just leaves this little loophole for somebody to get in on you. You almost have to be defiant about it and be like, I am. So like, I am losing weight or I am cutting down. Just kind of be like, it's already here. It's already happening. It's not trying. It's this ongoing process that I'm already in. So that would probably be one good way to actually help people, kind of fend off a little bit of that, because you don't get a lot of blowback when you say that, when you're kind of almost defiant about it.
Yeah, people might give you a little poke, but then they'll be like, oh, okay, good. And hopefully most people that you're close to and have any respect for you will support you instead of pull you back. The other thing is you may end up identifying some people who you know you can't be around, who just aren't mm-hmm. going to help. And you can't force them to support you. Like, you can only hope. I mean, I guess in these moments you will see who your best friends are and who is a little more insecure with themselves, because the ones who won't support you are the ones who aren't mature enough to support you or have their own security issues. So,
oh yeah, and watch out for the advice. It's just like relationship advice. Remember, the people that give relationship advice are always the ones that have the shittiest relationships.
Yeah, and that's another thing. People will start throwing out their own opinions on what to eat and what not to do and how to exercise and all that stuff. And I don't know, instead of even pushing back against them, I would just sort of listen, because it's just a conversation, right? It's not like you're actually going to go do anything that they say. So I would just sort of just politely listen, nod, and, I don't know, let them say their piece and off it goes. Unless there's somebody who's done it before and really knows what they're doing, then maybe there's someone worth – maybe they have a couple of tidbits that are worth it. But I don't know. People like to opine about all that stuff even if they never even tried it. That's one thing I noticed is, you know, I'll be – you know, somebody will be looking at one of our programs or, you know, one of our theories on or systems on how to eat or how to exercise. And I'll get a flood of questions about, well, does this do this? And, you know, is that going to, you know, cause a shoulder injury and this and that and the other? And all of these objections and all of these issues. And so my first question back will be like, oh, how long have you been on the program and when did your shoulder issue start? Or tell me at what part of the eating program did you actually, like, tell me what part of the program stopped working for you and we can work through it. They're like, oh, I haven't actually used the program or started any of it. So I'm like, so you're already opining about or finding everything you think theoretically might be wrong, and you haven't even tried it yet. So a lot of people just opinionate about everything and have never tried any of it. And once you actually start going through it, so to me, that means your opinion is sort of irrelevant. Once you actually start working through things, then you're like, well, no, I actually felt that happen. So now I need some help getting through it. But a lot of people just read it, you know, read a book and be like, oh, that won't work. It's like, well, how do you know if you haven't tried it?
Yeah, there's two types of things. I mean, there's what I mean, it's almost like book smarts, and I wouldn't even consider it book smarts, but like book experience saying, oh, I read this, and so this must be how it is. And then there's like real world experience with something. And they're two totally different things. And oftentimes they may not even match up to how, you know, or like if somebody gives you some advice and you try it, but that advice doesn't have – that person hasn't done it themselves real world. They just kind of read it. It typically doesn't come through the way it's supposed to. It doesn't work through the way it's supposed to. So
Yeah, it's the difference between knowledge and applied knowledge and the authority right. of experience. Like, I can, you know, I can explain to you how a certain exercise should feel and how it should go, and then the minute you do it once, you're like, oh, I get it. And then when we talk about it, you know, like, right at the end of the exercise, you're like, yep, I know exactly the feeling. I know exactly where that, you know, that strain is going to be. So there's only so much you can, you know, it's like the difference between empathy and sympathy. When you've been through something, you sympathize with the person. You're like, oh my God, I know the exact moment when that started to feel crappy, when the person said whatever they said. But if you've never been through it, you're like, that sounds like it would suck. And I can right. see how it would suck, but I really don't know how much that actually sucks. So,
right.
so, and then that's when it comes to training, taking care of your nutrition, however it is, whatever your nutrition goals are and whatever your training goals are. If you haven't even attempted a program and haven't gone any degree into one and haven't ever tried any of the eating programs we talk about, your opinion is like, yeah, okay, you know, you've read about it, but you have no actual experience with the thing, so you really don't know what I'm talking about until you start it. And then the discussion becomes alive. And you know what I find the interesting thing is the people who are the least experienced are the most opinionated, and the ones who actually have tried a lot of this stuff, they don't have much to say anymore because they're like, yeah, I get it. I know how that feels, and, you know, that's it. So it seems like there's more of a quiet confidence to the people who know what they're doing, and there's this sort of need to talk about it for the people who haven't tried any of it yet, but constantly consume the rhetoric, the reading, the marketing, the any of it, like reading ads, reading about supplements, reading about just different diet books. Like, you could read 30 diet books if you haven't tried any of them. What real knowledge do you have about them besides the theoretical, you know, framework of how the author thinks the diet might actually work?
It's kind of like that's kind of funny you mentioned that. It's kind of like people that can fight versus people that can't fight. Like people that are like
Fighters hit you. The ones who can't fight talk about it.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, there's like this quiet confidence with guys that can do it. They've got, you know what I'm saying? They don't talk about what they're going to do to you. They just do it.
Oh yeah, when I was in university, I worked as a bouncer for a while in undergrad, and you could tell the fighters right away. The fighters don't say a word. They just hit the guy, and then the guys that want to act tough but aren't, they're the ones with the mouth, and they'll talk all the way out the door, but they'll never raise a hand.
Right, that's really funny. it's kind of like you know, a lot of the guys that I do know, they're bodybuilder and that are serious about their stuff. You know, they really don't talk about what they're doing to cut down that much. You know, just kind of to normal guys. I mean, if somebody asks, they'll say what they're doing, but it's not like they're kind of walking around and like kind of.
No. If you go to the gym, the guys who know what they're doing don't say anything.
Yeah,
now, if you approach them and ask, they'll let you know. Like, they're like, oh, you know, this is what I do and that's what I do. But they don't advertise it. They don't go around like correcting people. They don't tell anybody anything. They just keep it to themselves because they know that talk's cheap, and they know that, you know, unless you ask, like, because they wouldn't have asked any, they wouldn't care for someone to come up and tell them. For them to get to the point where they knew what they were doing, they went and found people and asked. So they know how it works. They know that the random guy who comes up and tells them how things are is not a valuable resource, but they know that when they look and see the guy who they like the way that guy looks, and when they ask him, what did you do? I mean, well, and that guy offers, that's, you know, that's a solicited opinion to reach the look that of the guy with the opinion. So, I mean,
right.
You went right to the source. You're like, that guy's got big arms. I'm going to go ask him, how'd you do that? And the guy's like, oh, this is what I do. And then the other guy who's just opinionated about all of it, who's got the smallest arms in the gym, he's like, oh, I read in a magazine you do this, and I read in a magazine you do that. And it's like, well, how come you don't have
huge arms?
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, there's a quiet confidence around the guys who know what they're doing. And that just comes from experience. Once you get going with it, like I say, less and less the more and more I know, because the more and more I learn, the more I realize there's a lot I don't know either, and it becomes difficult to actually, like, I don't, you have to know where the other person's head is at before you even start talking to them. Like, it's kind of funny, I was a strength and conditioning coach for a while and so I was working with a women's hockey team, and one of the girls, you know, she was in her first or second year of university, and she was putting on a little bit of weight that she, you know, didn't want to be putting on. And she's like, how do I lose weight? And I just said, eat less. And that was, she completely was shocked, and all the other girls laughed. And I'm like, I'm serious. Like, eat less. They thought I was making fun of her. And I'm like, no, I mean, that's actually the answer. And they couldn't believe that was it. They actually got to the point where other girls on the team were like, oh, he doesn't know what he's talking about. That's not how you do it. And I was like, really? Like, I'm the coach. I'm the person with the nutrition degree. I'm the person who's worked for a supplement company. I've done all of this stuff. And you're going to listen to the other girl who's in second year university who's also gaining weight. But I'm the one who doesn't know what I'm talking about. And the answer was too simple for them. They needed the 5-year long nutrition degree answer of why eat less is still. They expected me to say some kind of carb cycling, switch your protein and do all this, you know, eat a shake and do your post workouts. They expected all of that. And when I just said eat less, they thought I was making fun of her. And I'm like, no, that's actually the, like, one day you'll learn that that's actually the answer, but that's it. And it's unbelievable how people can't accept that as an answer. I kind of view it as like if you ask the kids at the cartoon characters on South Park, you know, how do you lose weight? They'd be like, eat less. And then adults believe in all of this nonsense. And then once they try everything and fail on everything and they get back to eating less, they're like, oh, it was just eat less all along.
Well, let's talk about that real quick before we kind of, I guess, go for the holidays. But why is it that you think that people tend to try to avoid the simple solution of something like this? I mean, it's kind of a big deal, and
It's not a big deal. It's a huge deal. I mean, this is in North America, we basically eat ourselves to our grave.
Right.
The more food you eat, the faster and the more food you eat, you're basically shortening your life. You're just eating yourself to death. Is what the whole heart disease, diabetes, obesity thing is. It's becoming pretty evident in the literature when you build this whole picture out. It's obvious there's like a finite amount of food we can handle, and the more you put in, the worse it gets. Like within reason, right? Like as long as you're kind of at your daily needs, you're okay. But if you're constantly overdoing it, you're really just shortening your life via food intake.
Right. Yeah. So I guess the basic thing is with this is that, I mean, do you think it's that people need some complicated solution to feel like they actually accomplished something once it works? Even if the complicated solution really
is
simple answer undertone that's causing all the progress.
Okay, the answer I have for this, and I've thought a lot about this, is not an answer most people want to hear, but I think it's like a personal identity thing. I think it's an ego thing. I think people, because the only people who have this issue are in modern westernized industrial societies that can afford to have enough food around them that we can sit around eating it all day long. People like in third world countries who are like, you know, the countries are still developing and their food is still really scarce. They're not worried about overeating. They're just trying to eat enough. You know, so this is only an issue that, I guess you could say a privileged chunk of the world even has. Mm-hmm. So I think part of it is, people can, feel disappointed with themselves or with the progress they are or aren't making in their life. And instead of just sucking it up and doing something with themselves, it's easier to make it look like your life was difficult up to now to justify where you've gotten to. Mm-hmm. So if you and me have known each other for a long time and, you know, over the past 20 years, you've managed to progress, you know, progress in like measurable things. Like you make more money than I do. You've, you know, maybe you're in or have had more successful relationships, or in general, like people would say, man, he's always in a good relationship and he always seems happy with his relationships. And I'm kind of not. And you're in better shape than me. You're taking better care of your body. So, but we both grew up in basically the same area. We both grew up in the same socioeconomic status. So it's like, well, wait a minute. Why am I such a failure, and why are you so much getting so much more progress than me? So, because really neither of us have an excuse. We should both be as successful as we want to be, right? Because there's nothing holding us back. We're quote in the land of opportunity, whatever. So I think people build in barriers or build in a story of barriers they've overcome to justify just the level that they're at now. So it's like you retrofit your history to, so you say, look at what I've been through, that I should be proud that I've only made it this far. Like, you know, most people wouldn't even make it this. So all you do is fill in a bunch of hurdles. Mm-hmm. And so eating can be one of them. I think that's why people, oh, well, it's my metabolism. Oh, well, I don't deal with carbs well. It's all these excuses to justify why you only have the limited success that you have. Now, that's, I don't know, some people might be got right turned off when I said that, but it seems to fit nicely that people will explain away their lack of further life fulfillment or success by adding in this story of how difficult their life was up until now. And then they just sort of indulge in this story they've built about, oh yeah, that my life is so difficult. I should just be satisfied with where I am at now. And instead of saying, man, I have no reason not to be even better than I am right now.
Right.
So it's, I don't know. I mean, that's, to me, that's what it seems like, because I can't come up with any other reason why people choose to complicate the whole taking care of yourself beyond what it actually is, and it's actually pretty simple.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the thing. The more and more I kind of get down to the bottom of just a lot of this stuff is that, I think it's, you know, we talked about like the zen of anything, the zen of nutrition, the zen of dating, the zen of relationships, the zen of money, you know, this type of thing. It's like once you start out and you're kind of a rookie, you kind of inherently realize what the answer is. And then once you start studying about something, it gets all complicated and everything like that. And then, you know, then once you really get all the information that you, and all this complicated information, you're kind of disseminating yourself, then you realize that it was really the simple answer you had at the beginning all along, you know. So
yeah, it's kind of like in calculus, you get handed a formula, you use it, and then you're like, well, how did that work? You see the proof. Mm-hmm. And then you're like, oh right, just use the formula.
And right, exactly. It's like, okay, well,
but I guess people feel the need to justify why the thing worked in the first place,
maybe.
And also towards the end, when you get to the zen state of sort of, you're like, you get it, it's when you finally put it into practice. And you're like, and it's not an example that someone showed you, but you actually did it. And you're like, oh, that was it. That was pretty simple.
Right. So like for nutrition, it's like, okay, I guess I need to eat less. And then you go and you start looking at all the ways to eat less. And then you find out that maybe it's not eating less. It's like this. And then if you eat less,
I can't believe people summarily dismiss it before they even try it.
Right.
Like people will try all the weirdest diets in the world. And I used to do it too. I did it when I was younger. Because I'd never really cared about weight loss. I was always trying to gain weight when I was younger. And then, you know, I tried all of the wacky, like, you know, when Atkins came out, we were the first ones to do it. We were eating like just meat for like weeks, and it was disgusting, actually. We tried all that weird stuff. And then I'm thinking, I never even once tried to just eat like just less. I mean, that's what we do now because we've come full circle. But it's funny that people won't, They won't even try the simplest solution first. Instead, they'll try the most complicated first, at least in this field, and then work their way back to the simplest. Any other area of your life, wouldn't you try the simplest thing first? And then if that doesn't work, you'd try the next more – you just work your way from the simplest solution?
Well, this is what it's like, man. This is what it's like. I can tell you exactly. It's like the metabolism scare tactic is scaring everybody to death about your metabolism just vanishing. It'd be like if you if somebody said, well, the way you make money is you or the way to, you know, keep more money is to make more money while spending less. But if you lower your expenses too much, the money that's in your bank account is going to slowly deteriorate away.
Oh yeah, well yeah, but okay. So but the metabolism thing, yeah, I totally get your story. And then when you make it into a money analogy, it sounds ridiculous.
Right.
This industry really understands the concept that people have like an ego about it and don't want to admit that it's just overeating. So the metabolism thing places the blame somewhere else, right? Like as if you and your metabolism are two different things, and you can blame, like there's one ad campaign that says, and remember, it's not you, it's your metabolism. It's like, right. Well, not really. It's the amount of food you fed into that metabolism. So
yeah, but it's still scary, like the scary part where people they're so concerned of. It's not necessarily that they currently have a slow metabolism, but somehow, some way, that if they miscue a macronutrient or if they eat the wrong thing, then all of a sudden their metabolism is just going to decompress and
oh, just to completely come apart at the seams, and then they'll be all on medication and everything else.
And then you're screwed. Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. I mean, it's like
I believe it. People are scared of it. I kind of bought into the hype too. I used to think the same thing. I'm like, man, but when you actually break it down to its parts and compare and add in all of the marketing that each food sort of eating program tells you, none of them could actually work if all of them were true, because they all contradict each other to the point where there's nothing you could eat and you'd need to be eating all the time at the same time.
Right.
So I guess it's easy to get caught up in one story, but part of this goes into scientific illiteracy too. Like, most people don't understand, they don't even know what the word metabolism even means, and they don't understand science enough to even get when a claim is just couldn't possibly be true based on what we already know about human physiology. So the only reason you can be scared about this stuff is because you don't know enough about it to get when you're being just bold-faced lied to.
Right. So basically what we're asking people to do right now is just take a leap of faith and just test out the fact for themselves that your metabolism is not going to go anywhere. Just eat less. And I mean, just that's, I guess that's basically what we're saying. Just,
yeah, give it a try first, and yeah, forget everything you've heard and just try that. And that's,
you're going to have to suspend that scary belief that it's going to happen, and that, you know, all of a sudden your legs are going to fall off because you didn't eat, you know, 6 minutes a day or whatever.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I've been going down, man. Let me tell you what I eat on a daily basis, other than this weekend, just because, you know, we had people over. I mean, basically what I've been doing is I'll get up in the morning. I'll take 4 eggs. I'll put them in a plastic container or whatever. I'll put them in a microwave for like 2 minutes. I'll take out the yolks. I'll eat the whites. And then maybe there'll be some bacon laying around, you know, like 3 pieces of bacon. That's what I'll eat like when I first get up. And the only reason I'm doing that, I've really never been a big breakfast person, but I found out just through experimentation on myself that it actually helps hold my appetite at bay until dinner time. So I really don't eat anything during the day, you know, no snacks, no anything until dinner. And then, you know, maybe it was a salad with, you know, chicken, or maybe I eat a steak or something like that. But, you know, overall it's, and then of course I'm tired, so I'm not overeating at night anymore. So basically it's just been about 2 days or 2 times a day, you know. You would probably say it's probably a little bit higher protein, if you really had to look at it, but it's not because I'm not. Go ahead.
No, that's good. And how long have you been doing that pattern, and how much have you lost doing that?
About 2 weeks. I mean, about I don't know. I was down to the other day, it was like 192, so I don't know, six pounds or something. I mean, that, which, like I say, sitting at 192 was great. I mean, it felt good. Today, just because I'm bloated because of the weekend a little bit, but
okay. And then that's kind of a typical day for you, right? During your cut down,
right? Yeah, I mean, it wasn't anything. It didn't feel too crazy, and it's easy for me to do that because, you know, during the day, I mean, obviously, you know, I mean, we're working so hard and busting ass, I'm not even thinking about eating. So it just kind of works within my day, works within my hunger levels. You know, I've kind of got that part figured out, but it wasn't because I read something that said eat like this and do this. It was almost like a kind of a mini experiment on myself, and you just kind of figure out what works best for you, and then as long as it's under that thing, you just go with it.
Yep. And okay, so here's a good juxtaposition to that. So for my cut down, my typical day starts with a coffee and either like a tea biscuit or a donut, like every single day. And then, you know, it doesn't sound anything like yours. I start with that, and then sometime in the middle of the day, I'll have like another coffee break, and typically I'll have another little piece of something sweet with that coffee too, maybe some chocolate or I don't know, maybe like a bagel or something, and then in the evening I'll have you know, some kind of salad or vegetable mix with either a piece of steak or chicken or something like that. So that's it. So your day and my day sound, you know, they're not really all that similar. And I mean, it's not, and it doesn't always end with like the steak chicken thing. It might even end with like, I don't know, just like a bowl of soup or, you know, like a homemade sort of pizza bread thing. So that's it. Like, they're totally different type of days, but they both work for us. And the only consistent theme is eat less. Because you'd say mine's high carb. You say, like, from the, you know, yours sounded high protein. Mine sounded high carb.
Right.
And, but I mean, I've been cutting down for months now, like eating like that. So, and it's not like, you know, my muscles are withering away or I'm weak or anything like that. You know, I put up pictures of myself up on my blog and people guessed me as high as 220 pounds. And I was, you know, 188 in the picture. So, it's just less. I don't know how else to say that to people. Like, they just have to do it to believe it. So
yeah, you just figure out which. And that's the thing. That's the one thing I do like about reading some of the bodybuilding magazines and some of the fitness magazines, but mostly the bodybuilding magazines, because if you look at the undertones of what the guys are writing about how they eat and stuff, you'll understand that it's really always seems to be a work in progress of how they're working with their bodies to try to figure out how to dial themselves in the best. And it's eating less, but then they're trying to figure out the way within themselves that actually gets them to where they want to be. And all these guys, from what I can tell, I mean, they've got some basic things down, but they're different. They're like little different tweaks and things that each of them are doing that are different that kind of works within them. So that's kind of like the little snowflake deal.
Well, that's the part the industry is latching onto is the tiny, tiny little differences. It's like they're all already eating, like during a bodybuilder's cut down, they're just flat out eating less. Like they know that. Then from there, they're like, well, in that little bit of calories I'm eating, what mix of calories is it that gets me the look I want? So they're splitting hairs at that point, trying to get themselves to look a little bit tighter and make their skin look a little thinner, make their muscles look a little more, I don't know, hard, I guess, and dry and all that stuff. Like, none of that stuff's what the average person needs to worry about. Like, until you're down to, like, single-digit body fat percentages and you're trying to compete for a show, the ratio of carbs to protein is basically irrelevant. It's not going to show up on somebody who's not in contest shape. You're never even going to notice what difference any of that stuff makes. But that's the stuff the industry latches onto and tries to tell you, oh, it's, you know, it's the ratio of carbs to this or that. I mean, no, that was never it. It was just right. That's just borrowed from a bunch of bodies. And those bodies, like you said, they just monitor it, and they only know if something works for them by looking at themselves in the mirror on a daily basis. They're like, oh, the last 2 weeks of what I've been doing makes me look like that. Mark that down in the book. That's what I do. And, you know, if you read enough of those things, you'll find guys who work well with eating pasta and breads. You find other guys who can't stand that stuff. You find other guys who eat, like, lots of protein. You find other guys who just eat traditional kind of higher carbs. And each one of them ends up on stage looking just like the next guy over. And they all did it a different way. So there's no real rule.
Right. That was kind of my point. I mean, you kind of read about that if you really look at it with a different eye and see what they're talking about. I mean, you can see they just about all of them say, hey, I came in a little bit bloated this year or whatever. I think I messed up here. Next time I'm going to try this instead. I mean, it's like an ongoing experiment for those guys, even at that point. And so I guess that's kind of my point is that, you know, even with yourself, you know that eating less is overall the key to getting where you want to be. The experiment with it, it's just trying to figure out the best way for you to accomplish that goal. Like, how is it going to help you stick? I mean, for me, I've kind of got a rhythm down where this kind of works best for me and the way my hunger works and stuff like that. You know, getting up a lot earlier, eating something, higher in protein at the beginning of the day. You know, that's just working for me right now. So, I mean, it's not because I'm consciously thinking about, okay, well, It's because it's high protein. It means, you know, it's Atkins-like and stuff like that. I haven't even really thought about it so much. I just figured out that, okay, well, this is working. I know it's caused me to eat less. Okay, let's go with that. Let's not flog the horse for what it's not.
Yeah, and I think most diet programs that bury people under a bunch of rules make them feel terrible about themselves when they can't follow them. And you and I aren't following any rule besides the rule that we know works for us. And if you just, I mean, at least for losing weight, if the only rule you followed was eat less, and then from there it's just like however you feel like doing it, well, you can do whatever you want. You can do what I do and eat sweets all day long, or you can do what you do and eat, like, you don't eat as much sweets as I do. And that's just what it is. There's no, right. And we're still getting the results we want. Like, so I, you can't really say either of our systems don't work because they clearly do. And right. then all of those other diet philosophies just get thrown away because they just restrict you and make you feel worse about yourself if you can't follow them. I can't follow any of them. Any of what any of that stuff says, like if I picked up 5 diet books from the store, I'd be completely in violation of every single one of their rules.
Right.
So.
Yeah. I mean, so for the average person, I mean, maybe a good idea would be to, I mean, if you understand this whole thing, and again, we're kind of going back into the holiday season and things like that, it's still all about getting a streak together and then, you know, understanding that on these specific days that you're kind of going to eat over and it's part of your plan or whatever, and then you're going back to what you were doing beforehand. But, I mean, maybe take a week or two or three and just understand that, you know, the first 3 weeks, you're basically just going to try to figure out what works best for you. I mean, how to do some things. I mean, maybe you kind of take my approach at the very beginning and try and see if that works. Maybe you go with John's approach, see if that works. If that doesn't work and you find out that maybe you're hungrier during the day, maybe you do have to split up more meals and take that approach. Maybe that's just what works best for you. But, you know, maybe take some time and try to kind of figure out and get what feels good and comfortable for you. And then once you kind of figure out something that's kind of working, just go with it.
Stick with it. Oh, yeah. To be clear, that's a good point. We're not saying that any of those things are like eating a bunch of small meals a day don't work and eating high protein doesn't work. We're not saying any of that doesn't work. We're just saying it's not a rule set in stone. And you have to figure out if that works for you. Like right. some people love Eat Stop Eat. Some people try it and they're like, just not for me. And that's fine. It just doesn't mean everyone can do it. It's just another way. And don't get caught up thinking any one way is the right way. Because you got to remember, most of these books are written and most of those styles of eating are hooks that are marketing designed hooks. They actually aren't based in science at all. They're just interesting hooks that are fodder for people to chew on and ways of selling more diet books. The underlying premise of any diet is always less food. And then from there, the hook is how you sell the book about it. And so people get caught up hoping that that's how this shit works when really it's all it ever did was make you eat less. But if living a miserable life trying to fit yourself into a pattern that you just hate, you don't have to do it that way.
Well, we could write 2 diet books right now. We could write the Eat 2 Times a Day.
Brad Howard Eat the High Protein 2 Times a Day Weight Loss Book.
And then all I have to do is find a couple of you guys out there to do it and get some similar results, and there you go. I've got a diet book. You can
and
have
the John Barbin Coffee and Donuts Weight Loss
All Day Diet.
Yeah, exactly.
And you could go out and find some people that could do it. It doesn't matter if you find people that can't do it. As long as you could find people that can do it, there you go. You got a diet.
Yeah, exactly. So so I guess we should wrap up here. What's our take home messages here?
I think the big take-home message is to make sure you work these things into your plan. So if you're trying to cut down, yes, it is possible to cut down during the holidays. You just have to work these things in your plan. Don't fly by the seat of your pants when it comes to the days. You know, make sure that going up into that particular day, you realize that realize it for what it is. Don't try to rely on willpower to save you when you've got pecan pie in front of you and you love pecan pie, because, you know, you're just going to get really discouraged. So when you work that into your plan, it's part of your plan, and, you know, you don't really have to worry about it. That's the one takeaway.
And preemptively. So today's Monday. If I'm assuming most people listening to this are going to be having some pretty big eating on Thursday, Friday, and probably the weekend. So take it light this week, take it light from Monday to Thursday, or, you know, keep it if you can create the deficit between now and then, if you can under eat, I guess, so to speak, between now and Friday, you should be in really good shape on Friday to enjoy yourself, not feel bad about it, and light up Christmas dinner as much as you want. And then if you can, bookend that with another light day the day after Christmas, and you shouldn't gain anything. And you should feel fine eating as much as you want on those days, however many days you have of big eating. I'm assuming it's more than just one.
Yeah. And one more thing that might help you out is that, you know, typically a lot of these dinners aren't, at least from where, how we eat, they really aren't that bad as far as calories until you get to the desserts. At least from where, you know, from when we go eating around and stuff, because it's like turkey and like ham and like there's a lot of vegetables and like collard greens and stuff, which actually can be kind of bad because they soak that in bacon. But as far as calories, you know, mashed potatoes, I mean, not super duper high in calories. But when you get to the things like your pecan pie or whatever, when it's like 500 to 700 calories a slice.
Oh, man, I had 3 slices of pie on Saturday.
Yeah.
I had like a Neapolitan pie dessert. I had a cherry pie, apple pie, and pumpkin pie in one giant fanned out triple slice. It was awesome.
Yeah. So if for some reason you're during this week and you're just you haven't got to a point where you can really get in a streak or whatever and really you're not comfortable and you haven't really went that big of a deficit leading up into it or whatever, that would probably be my suggestion to the things that you would really want to pay attention to. If you were going to load up on food, load up on the other stuff first, that such that when it comes time for dessert, you're probably not, you know, packing back, you know, 3 slices of pie at, you know, 1,000 calories a pop or however much it is. Because I looked at pecan pie the other day when I was in the grocery store and one slice of it. It was a small slice, like 500 to 600 calories. I about fell out, dude. I was like, holy shit.
It's dense, man. It's dense. And it seems like there's always room for dessert. It's part of the whole filling up on a particular flavor. We'll get into that later, but.
Yeah. But it's just funny. If you had to do something like that, that would probably, if you had to really try to keep an eye out for something, that would probably be my only.
If you had to try to exert willpower, that's it. But even then, I think that's a losing battle. I think create the deficit beforehand. And then your only sort of afterwards dealing with it thing would be to throw in a fast too, like right afterwards.
Yeah. If that's something that you're
if you can,
doing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I can do it. No problem. It's really easy for me. It'd just be a matter of not eating breakfast.
Yeah. If not, then just a low calorie day and you should be okay.
Right. Which.
And the other thing is socially, it's also way harder to be there, like picking and choosing what foods to eat and not eat just because of some sort of program you're on. So socially, it's also simpler to just sort of keep your mouth shut about what you're up to and just enjoy the day. You know, that way you're never in that awkward conversation of, you know, you're trying to cut down or you're trying to change the way your body looks. And then you get into the whole, like, people are going to be questioning you on what you will and won't eat. And then it turns into this sort of weird, like, people are monitoring how you eat that day. So.
Just say I already ate earlier. I'm not hungry.
Yeah, or whatever it is. But just the kind of the less it comes up, the better.
Yeah, very, very true. All right, man. Well, cool. Well, I don't think we've got anything else. Again, we've kind of beat a dead horse, went on a bunch of tangents and had some fun. So, you know, if you guys have any questions or anything like that, definitely put them in the blog posts. If you aren't subscribed to the iTunes feed, it's aelinks.com/iTunes, and you can subscribe. I think we're going to set up a Zoom feed too, probably either this week or after Christmas too. So, you know, if you guys have Zooms or, you know, stuff like that, like I say, we're kind of rookie tech. I'm not going to say dunces, but, you know, when it comes to stuff like this, you know, we kind of do what you guys tell us to do. So if there's any other areas we need to be in, just let us know and we'll do it. So you got anything else real quick or are we done?
No, I think we're done.
All right, man. Well, happy holidays. There won't be any podcasts on Friday of this week, obviously, because of Christmas. But we will come back on Monday to kind of get you back on track after the holidays. And we'll see you then.